On. We have a busy day. I'll just say before we start the first bill with Senator Hand, our agenda today, of course, will be the three bills we have before us. We want to get those done. I apologize for the late start here, but lots of activity. We're going to get through these bills today, and then we will be recessing and then reconvening at 5:30, as we've discussed before, and we'll be going through a lengthy series of liquor bills tonight. Mm-hmm. And again, tonight we will not be voting on those liquor bills, but we will be laying them over, and I better turn off my phone. So members, then, that will be the plan for today. And we'll start now with Senator Hand. Senate File 2035, the first bill on the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. Senate File 2035 is a bill that grew out of work that was being conducted by a healthcare reform task force that I participated in, as well as other members of the Senate and members from the other body, people representing the private insurance market. And one of the concerns in the course of looking at a number of issues related to improving health insurance in the state of Minnesota, just the whole climate had to do with some of the prospective things that might happen as the federal law is working its way through, and there's certainly questions and uncertainty about that. But there has been concern raised about the term that is being used to create what have been called navigators in the bill, in the federal legislation. We do have a bill that, attempts to address that. And, Mr. Chairman and members, I do have a delete-all amendment that I'd like to offer as an author's amendment, if I could.
Sir, that's being passed out right now.
I think that's your A1 amendment.
A1 amendment.
And perhaps if...
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the A1 amendment.
Senator Cruz moves the A1 amendment, the author's amendment, to Senate File 2035. All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. And the motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Senator Hand, to your delete everything amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. So this again deals with that issue of what are navigators in the proposed federal structure, and it has raised some concerns about for people who work in the insurance marketplace. And if it pleases the committee, I'd like to ask Mr. Wilkin to come forward and help us present some perspective on the need for this legislation and what it does.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Tim Wilkin, representing the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters. I think Senator Hand laid it out very well as far as the navigators under the new law are going to be doing many of the functions that are currently performed by licensed agents. And this would basically say a navigator who is doing those same functions needs to be licensed also. What the delete all amendment does is it forms the bill in a different way because the original language would have brought in health benefit administrators, HR personnel within companies. So some parties at the Capitol expressed some concern about that, and this is a little bit more direct way of doing the same thing.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, I think, again, to make the point that there is a lot of uncertainty about what the federal law will do or if it will be enacted at all, and so this is a little bit prospective, but as the law is written today, it does call for the creation of something called a navigator, and there is great concern that that this part of the federal law may result in the, I don't want to, maybe destruction is too strong a word, but certainly radical change to the private insurance marketplace and the ability for individuals who currently are in business, in the insurance business, to continue to act and have a business as they've enjoyed in the past. So this is a way to make sure that those current businesses are not going to be eliminated by the federal law, and also to assure the public that when they are looking at insurance products and whatever, if the federal law does become reality, that they have a professional, someone who is licensed and competent to evaluate and assess insurance options. And that really is the purpose of licensure, is something that, of course, Minnesota and other states have used for a long time to assure the public that they're dealing with a professional. I think it is needed in this case to make sure that if this goes forward in the fashion it has been described, that we have competent individuals that can help the public be successful in their looking at options in health insurance.
Okay, question. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hahn, what is the definition in public law for navigator? Because my experience with that term is not what I'm reading here.
Senator Hahn?
Senator Eaton, I think the I'm not familiar exactly what that Mr. Wilkin knows the precise definition. But it is a term of art that is being used to describe a role in the public, in the federal law.
Senator Eaton?
Thank you. My understanding of a navigator, as it's currently being used, is, for instance, in UCARE, they have navigators for people who have UCARE insurance who help them negotiate the medical system and how to if they need, if they're diabetic, how to see a diabetic nurse and where they should go under their insurance and that type of thing. And I believe most, they're either a certified medical professional or a registered nurse. So I don't know that they have anything to do with insurance. That's my question.
Senator Hahn.
excuse me, Mr. Chair and members. In subdivision, in the first section of the amendment, it talks about navigator as described in Public Law 111-148. That is the federal ACA law. So the federal law has a term called navigator that is defined here. And so this bill applies to that definition in the federal law. It says for purposes of Minnesota, that definition in federal law cannot must be a licensed individual as described in Section 2 of our bill.
Senator Brown? Oh, I'm sorry, Senator, are you finished?
Or? Well, I'm just wondering what that definition is in federal law. I mean.
Mr. Chair, and as I said, I don't have that in front of me, but it does not require a licensed individual to fulfill that role.
I mean, Senator Eaton, our Senate Counsel is going to go get that definition, go look
that
up for us, so we'll have that.
Thank you.
And in the meantime, then, Senator Brown?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hahn, could you clarify on your A1 amendment, line 1.13, 1.14, a navigator that only facilitates enrollment in state public programs? Can you clarify what state public programs would be?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Brown, that applies to administrators at the State Department that are or in the counties that are working with public programs and dealing as they do today. We have people that are helping people get enrolled in public programs that are not licensed agents, and we're not proposing to change that.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Brown.
I could interpret that, I guess, as people who want to enroll in the PEEP programs, since the name stands for Public Employees Insurance Program. So that would just concern me a little bit that PEEP programs are insurance programs, and they would want to be a licensed agent.
Senator Hahn.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Brown, I can understand. Perhaps the language may need a little bit of clarification. We could perhaps insert the word subsidized, state-subsidized public programs or something to try to make clear that we're really talking about are the public programs that we currently provide and are administered by state or county employees. And if that would make this more palatable, we certainly could offer that. I would offer that as an oral amendment to the bill.
Let's first see, Senator Brown, does that get at your concern about that language in here, adding the word subsidized in between state and public. So it would be state public or state subsidized public programs.
Are PEEP programs subsidized?
I'm sorry?
Are PEEP programs subsidized?
I don't know about that. Senator Dames, maybe you, and we just sent counsel away, so. Okay. We'll get an answer on that as well. Find out about that to see if this, so maybe we'll hold off on that. So we'll have we have two pending requests for Senate counsel, and while he's working on that, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Han, does the A1 amendment then mean that with the health care exchanges that would be set up at an individual who would want to purchase health care insurance through an exchange could be helped by son or daughter or a relative? Is that now permitted under your A1 amendment, or would they still have to use the services of an insurance agent?
Senator Han.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rust, the duties that are prescribed in the federal law that the navigator has defined in the section that's noted, those are the duties that would be, under this bill, required to be done by a licensed individual.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rust, what's the answer to my question?
Change current law.
When I'm old and feeble and want this kind of insurance, can my daughter be the navigator for me to purchase on the individual market, or does my daughter have to go to Mr. Wilkins?
Well, Mr. Chairman,
this would not be my choice.
And
nice
perhaps Mr. Wilkins
be.
can answer, but I this does not change current law that permits people to have their relatives or others help them with whatever they may need to do. I think what it's getting at is a particular role that is defined in federal law. And all we're trying to say is that role, as it is, if it does apply, which is still sort of somewhat in doubt, that role must be fulfilled by a licensed person.
So,
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, so I'm trying to understand what Senator Brown was getting at, too. So if that's the case, what is the impact of the A1 amendment with regard to lines 13 and 14? And why did you need to do that if that's the case? Just trying to understand.
Mr. Wilkin.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, the reason why the language is in on 13 and 14 is because there could be an issue when you require a navigator to have an insurance agent's license, which they should have if they're representing private plans. But if they're just simply enrolling people in public programs such as Medicaid, Minnesota Care, those type of programs.
What about the health care exchanges?
Whether it's through the health care exchange or not, you would conceivably end up requiring a license for public employees, including counties and DHS employees, that are they're not working in representing private plans at all. They're just simply enrolling people in the public plans, whether it's through the exchange or not. And our intent is not to require a license of those people because they're not doing anything different than they're doing today before the ACA or before the exchange. They're simply doing their job, enrolling applicants that come to the county or to the state in those public programs.
So, Mr. Chairman, once again, Mr. Wilkins.
Senator Rest.
So in the example I gave, would this amendment, given the law passes, I want to purchase through the exchange, this would not prohibit my daughter from being my navigator in purchasing health care insurance for me on the through the health care exchange? Yes or no?
No, it would not prohibit that.
Mr. Wilkins.
That informal advice.
Thank you. I thought it was a fairly simple question. That's all I needed. Thank you very much.
Okay. Senator Brown, to that point.
To that point. And just to respond to Senator Rest's question, right now you can have a family member, and most insurance agents sitting here would, if you're a reputable agent, you want a family member there to assist you if that's what you want. So this isn't going to change any of that. You still want to have a licensed insurance agent there with you to assist any family member there that's to help you. So that wouldn't change it in that regard.
That would be a preference, not a requirement. So let me ask you.
All right. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question to follow up on Senator Rest's line of questioning. The concern I have with regard to the potential exchanges is that there will be most likely a lot of online purchasing. So how does the licensed agent, what's the relationship between a licensed agent in the event that, you know, in the best of all possible worlds, the online exchange allows me to compare prices, compare benefit sets, pick this one, that one. What's the role in this law of the agent in that scenario?
Senator Hand or Mr. Wilkin?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bonoff. We find often that Senator Bonoff, sorry, old house habits. We find that often when an individual goes online now to make a purchase, and they can do that stuff now. There are sites out there to compare plans and offer plans online, but they often want the advice of an agent in making their final decision. They see many plans that are available to them. They want to know which of these complex products are really appropriate for their situation, so they'll call an agent. But if someone goes on right now and elects that they know what they want to make their decision, they've identified the product, they can do that right now. But if they have to talk to an individual and get advice, that person should be licensed and competent to sell the product.
All right, Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, and just a follow-up on that, you are certain that this will not create a barrier, because I think that our generation does like to talk to somebody. That's just how we were sort of trained to do business, very personal one-on-one service. The young people aren't like that at all. I mean, my kids do everything online. They buy their glasses online. They do everything. And so I don't think that will be the model going forward. I think they will use their information and make choices. You're certain that there's nothing in this that will be a barrier to that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, there's nothing in this amendment that would do that. The Department of Commerce might know some other piece of statute that would require some kind of licensed interaction on online purchase, but I don't know of any.
Thank you.
I will say real quick, I know the Blue Cross Blue Shield did a study on online purchasing, and they found even the 20-somethings liked getting advice when once it came down to purchasing something like this, because it is a complex product.
Thank you.
Okay, here's what I want to do. I want to get back to Senator Eaton's question, make sure we've resolved that, and then we also want to get back to Senator Brown's issue about the subsidized programs. But Senator Gazelke, you had something to the point we're on right now? Okay,
yep.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Wilkin, I think you can bring some clarity too, but I know if you if you go online and then you want to talk to a live person on the phone, whether it's insurance, mutual funds, whatever, normally what I've seen is that person that talks to them on the phone then has to be licensed as well. And I think that would address where Senator Bonoff's coming from. That still is the relationship they want, because they want an expert that's been trained, that knows the business, that's been through all of it. And so I'm guessing that's how that would play out there as well.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazelke, that's correct. That really doesn't change from current law to now.
Yeah. Okay. Now, let's go back to Senator Eaton's because she wanted to know about the more of the what a navigator is as described in Public Law 11-148. And we have the light reading that is the ACA here. And Mr. Stang has found that. And Senator Eaton, then do you have your question answered? You have a copy of it there. Did you have any follow-up questions specifically on that?
I guess, thank you, Mr. Chair, that my question would be, I guess I'm trying to figure out what the impact of this would be on In the community, most people who are picking out insurance, especially under the programs that are fall under the Medicaid and Medicare, are navigated through those by social workers or nurses. And so under this, it's, and this clearly says that they shall, that the navigator shall not be a health insurance issuer or receive any consideration directly or indirectly from any health insurance issuer in connection with the enrollment. So I'm trying to...
Senator, we could take care of Senator Brown's issues, and maybe if you have a specific question or amendment or something you wanted to pose to the witnesses or Senator Hamm, you could certainly come back to that any time.
Okay.
Does that be helpful? Okay. Senator Brown, now you had a question about the subsidized program. We have a suggestion here that might help you, and that is to add language that would just insert under the specific statutes that deal with the Medicaid and MinCare, which would be under, you could insert language that says under Minnesota Statutes 256B and Minnesota Statute 256L. Those would cover those programs. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I think so. My point is, Mr. Chair, is that I don't want these two lines as an option for people to circumvent what the intent of this very good bill is, and that is for the public employees insurance programs, or MCHA, to say, well, I don't have to be a licensed agent. I didn't have to go through training. I can just simply be a navigator and not really understand what it is I'm trying to explain to the client. So I don't want that process being circumvented.
Care and Medicaid, right? So I don't think he wants to exclude that.
Mr. Chairman?
He wants to make it up. Yeah, Senator Hannity.
We're talking a little bit about this issue as well, and an alternative would be to make it specific for programs administered by the Department of Human Services, that this would apply only to programs, public programs administered by the Department of Human Services.
Senator Brown, is that... does that cover those bases then better than what the suggestion I just had into those specific chapters just by saying programs under the Department of Human Services? Does that cover that then?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if Senator Hand's more knowledgeable on this subject than I am, so if you feel that that would cover it, then I'm fine with that.
I think Senator Hand's heard the concerns and the discussion. Senator Hand, you could certainly propose that we could see if we could find a member here to move a proposal that you might have for us.
I think if we, Mr. Chairman, if we inserted the word subsidize between state and public on line 1.13, and after the word programs at the end of line 1.13, put administered by the Department of Human Services.
So a combination of those.
Right. And again, the intent here, and to Senator Brown's question and other questions, what we're really trying to do is preserve the ability of the private insurance market to continue to do what it does today without putting impediments or barriers and certainly not trying to prohibit the public program administered as they are today by state and county employees.
Okay. Senator Brown, would you like to move that amendment?
I will, Mr. Chair.
I'll restate it.
Do I need to read it?
No, I can do that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the amendment.
Senator Brown moves to amend the bill on line 1.13, inserting after state the word subsidized, and after the word programs, administered by the Department of Human Services. And that is the amendment. Do members have any questions on the Brown Amendment? Okay. Then, seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no. And the motion prevails, and that Brown Amendment is adopted. Okay, then... we've taken care of that item there. Then we're on to Senator Reinert. You had questions.
Mr. Chair,
mine was actually to the point, and maybe the point has passed us now. But sort of on the line of questioning that Senator Rest and Senator Bonoff and others were asking, just clarify for me that folks that work inside for-profit organization who provide counsel and guidance to, I mean, I'm thinking of HR staff. They're also not impacted by what, I mean, I hate to see us unknowingly require a bunch of HR people to go get licenses, especially in this committee, Mr. Chair, when we've talked about regulation and license and, and the lowest obstacles into the industry. So,
Senator Hahn?
I think that the bill, the amendment was really created as a way to address that kind of concern. And my understanding, that's what was this language was reached in consultation with business representatives that had raised that concern. My understanding is it meets that requirement.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Senator.
To that point.
To that point, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Chair Gerlach.
Senator Dames.
Now I have a new concern that I hadn't thought of before. So, Senator Hahn, that would be a very, you know, serious unintended consequence, of course, if our HR directors were not able to do that. So I just didn't hear emphatically that you were certain that it sounded like you were kind of sure, but you weren't certain. So could we get some certainty around
perhaps
that?
Perhaps we could have somebody who was involved in the discussion about the original language of the bill.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth McMullen. I represent Minnesota Business Partnership. Senator Reiner, we did raise that concern with the original language. I believe that the language that was adopted, the delete all, does address that concern. I am going to, we just got this language this morning, so I'm going to check that out, but I do believe that it does address the concern.
Follow up,
Senator Reiner.
To Mr. Chair. So which part do you feel addresses your concern? Just the reference to the public law? I mean, it's as far as author's amendments go, it's a pretty short and sweet one. So that I'm not reading into it a lot of comfort, but I'm also not an attorney, and public law 111 doesn't mean a lot to me. So.
Mr. Chair, Senator Reiner, the original language, if I can, the original language defined a new, made a new definition with facilitate enrollment, and that was very broad, talking about counseling, advising, directing, et cetera. The new language being totally changed around with the word, using just the word navigator specifically, again, I believe that that addresses our concern, but I need to check out exactly what the definition and so forth.
Okay. Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, or Madam, Mr. Chairman, and members. I believe what we were trying to accomplish is to recognize that the term navigator as defined in this amendment is a specific term that is a part of the federal law. Mm-hmm. And that term applies to certain things that those people called navigators would do. And so that represents a new thing that is prospectively going to be required of people to do. All we're saying is whatever that new thing is, and I don't believe that that navigator as defined in the federal law applies to HR directors or others. I think the original language we had in the bill was vague enough that it could be construed to do that. So all we're trying to do is say whatever this new thing that is being created in federal law, we do not want that new thing to replace the role of private insurance agents and brokers today. And that's really what this is trying to accomplish.
Okay.
And that, to that point, sorry.
To that point, Senator Bonoff.
Chair Gerlach and Senator Hahn, if we do find that it does not meet the intention that we're all, you know, very aligned with here, will you make sure to massage it so that we don't do anything, you know, negative for our HR directors?
Senator Gerlach and Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonhoff, absolutely, that's not my intention, and we've been trying to work to make sure that we would not do that. If it does emerge at some point before we get to final enactment, we'll bring an amendment to the floor if necessary to make sure we get it right.
Okay, Senator Dames, and we also have two testifiers on this, and then we also have two other bills on the agenda.
So. Just a point of clarification on a comment that I made earlier when I stated that the MCHA was subsidized. That subsidy basically comes from the surcharges on other health policies and not necessarily from the state. So I just want to clarify that.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, Senator Hand, we have some testimony. I think that Mr. Tyler probably does not need to testify, I think. Is that what I'm hearing? Okay, and then we're looking at Ms. Brace. Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Twyla Brace. I'm president of Citizens Council for Health Freedom. And Senator Hand and I have talked about the original language. And in the original language, I had expressed concern that it was a freedom of speech issue, that all sorts of people wouldn't be able to talk about insurance or different parts of insurance. And so this is the first time that I have seen the new language this morning when I walked in. So just for a perspective from our organization, we're not happy with the federal health care reform law. We haven't supported any part of that law becoming part of Minnesota's law. And we have particularly opposed the government health insurance exchange. And so I guess what concerns me about this is just that it actually incorporates into state law the word navigator, the section 1311, which is the health insurance part of the health insurance exchange law. The navigator is only part of the health insurance exchange law in the federal law. And so I understand why the insurance agents would want this. The definition of navigators in the federal law is actually very broad. Our organization could be a navigator. Anybody could be a navigator. And so what this language does is say that the navigators, that only navigators in Minnesota can be the agents. And so I can understand why they would like it, but we're not happy with the idea of putting a piece of the federal reform law into state law because we feel like it accedes to the federal law while the constitutionality is still under question.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the audience? Any from committee members? Any other questions for the witness? Then I'd ask Senator Hand, do you have any other, or I should, from the audience, is there any? Oh, okay. Welcome to the committee.
Sorry, I didn't get to tell you ahead of time. Thank you, members of the committee. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And we do have continue to have some concerns about the bill. Partly it's because it really would now require navigators to be brokers, and we believe this will be detrimental to our state's efforts to reduce health care disparities and to help low-income people who are uninsured to connect to health care and to health insurance. We currently have navigators for our mental health crisis teams, staff at the Disability Linkage Line, Minnesota Help Healthcare Site, county staff at community health and mental health care clinics, community health workers, and frankly, even staff at NAMI. What we all do is really help people connect to health insurance, typically a state program, but not always because people don't always qualify. They provide advice on, frankly, how to go to healthcare.gov, look up single policies. We may direct people to MSHA, which, of course, is not subsidized by the state. With the new Minnesota Healthy Contribution Plan going into effect for people over 200% of poverty, they might educate them on how to look for a plan that meets their needs. All of us provide information. We counsel people on how to read the information on the website. We explain what a deductible is or what it means when it says the plan only covers generics. Under this bill, we wouldn't be able to carry out those activities. Community health workers would particularly be impacted by this bill, and they really provide a very important part of their work is to teach navigation through the healthcare system. They increase people's healthcare knowledge and bridge the gap between cultures and healthcare systems. And you'll be removing this very important navigator function from their role. The term navigator, yes, is most often connected with the healthcare exchange, and an important role in an exchange is to help individuals and communities overcome obstacles to obtaining and maintaining quality healthcare and appropriate health insurance. The Healthcare Exchange Task Force, which I serve on, and which I know some of you don't like, has actually had some very good, thoughtful discussions about the role of navigators. In fact, there was even a separate work group that spent quite a deal of time having discussions on what exactly a navigator should be, and one of the co-chairs was a broker.
The task force adopted clear recommendations on this issue, and not once did anyone say that only brokers could be navigators. And I do have a copy of those recommendations, particularly on the navigators.
Paige could hand out the...
pass them out. There was agreement that there would actually be different navigator roles designed to address the specific needs of the particular populations to be served under the exchange. There would be certification or training requirements, but again, they weren't limited necessarily to licensed brokers. It was envisioned that navigator services would include those services provided in community-based organizations, particularly those that are in or serve the communities that we are targeting. So this is not, navigator's role is not just about selling insurance. It's making people understand what an exchange does, how to be able to go to it, understand some of the concepts of insurance that people might not have any idea what they are. There is a role for brokers, and there is a role for navigators, and NAMI believes that our communities need both. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to testify? Then Senator Eaton.
Thank you. As our last testifier clarified for me also, my concern with the what I consider is a changing of the definition of navigator through the use of licensing is exactly what was described, being a community mental health worker. We are the ones who say, look at this program, they don't cover this med, and this med, and you need those for your particular condition as a nurse. And so they would go to the next program. Yes, this one covers those meds, but this is the cost. I mean, we just walk them through their program, the different policies. We don't sell them. We don't get anything from the insurance companies. And we started doing this with Medicare D when we had to sign everybody up with that. So I guess I see this as all of a sudden anybody in the community healthcare is going to have to get a brokerage license. And otherwise, these services won't be able to be provided. And I have real concerns about that.
Okay. Senator Gazalka?
Thank you, Ms. Chair and Committee. I guess, you know, I hate to open up a can of words, but then the question is why should a health insurance agent have to be licensed to give that information and help them through that process? It's, you know, it's a can of worms. We want, if we're going to be giving expert advice about what product to have and why, it should be a level playing field. There should be some common ground of what's required. For insurance, I don't sell much health insurance in my other practice, like almost none, but I do know a lot about it. And you have to go to classes for renewal to make sure you're giving the right product to the right person. And I would be very concerned about somebody not being licensed in any field providing expertise, and so that would be my concern with this.
Okay.
Could I address that?
Senator Eaton.
Thank you. I guess I'm not aware of any brokers who are willing to work with Medicaid patients at our community centers who would like to provide that service to people who can't afford a broker and generally are on Medicaid or Medicare.
Okay. Then, seeing no other further questions from the committee, Senator Hand, did you have anything to say?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I don't have any additional testifiers or witnesses. Again, the concern being raised about what may happen, many of us hope that it does not happen, but I think there is a legitimate concern on the part of many people who make their living in the insurance marketplace to make sure that their livelihood and the service that they provide to consumers and the citizens of the state be preserved, and we believe this is a step to make sure we can do that.
Okay, then Senator Brown moves that Senate File 2035 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to general orders. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay.
Nay.
The motion prevails, and Senate File 2035, as amended, is recommended to pass and sent to general orders. Thank you, Senator Han. And you also have the next bill on the agenda. So we'll Shift gears. This is be Senate File 2139. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Senate File 2139, and this is a bill that changes the regulation and jurisdiction over HMOs from the Department of Health to the Department of Commerce. I believe there are some amendments. That probably would be good to try to offer initially to put the bill in the form it.
We have the A2 and the A. One. Okay, the A1 and the A2 amendments. We'll pass those out so members have them. And looks like these are, neither of these are a delete everything. So we'll have to piece these together, Senator Hand, then you'll want to walk us through the bill.
Just see the amendments.
Members, let's go ahead and adopt these author's amendments, then we'll do the first one, the A1 first. So Senator Thompson moves the A1 amendment be adopted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
And the motion prevails, and the A1 author's amendment is
kind of a mood, huh?
Adopted.
Yeah.
Oh, she doesn't
haven't
have it yet.
It.
Well, you know what? Then let's we will either. Then we'll wait. I just thought we would.
Mr. Chairman, could I get a copy of the amendments as well?
You don't even have that.
Even he voted against it.
Yes.
Hopefully he's not voting at all. I will hold on to that.
Thanks.
A1 is gone. Senator Hand, do you have copies of the amendments?
I do, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, you have those. Okay, then, members, we did adopt the A1. Everybody should have the A2 amendment before them. Senator Thompson moves adoption of the A2 author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. And the motion prevails, and the A2 amendment is adopted. Senator Hand, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Generally, I think the reason for the bill is to try to make sure that we're having insurance regulation occurring in the Department of Commerce. And there have been, I guess, questions over some period of time about the difference in jurisdiction. And so this is an attempt to try to bring the regulation of insurance into one part of the state governance. I do have Mr. Jeff Bartsch here, who I'd like to ask for his testimony on this bill and perhaps even speaking more directly to the amendments that were just adopted, and would welcome his testimony.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Bartsch. I represent Medica. Medica does support Senate File 2139. I think as most people on this committee understand, as Senator Hand pointed out, the Department of Commerce regulates health insurance. The Department of Health regulates HMOs that sell health insurance. In that relationship, the Department of Health actually has a memorandum of understanding where the Department of Commerce does the financial oversight for the HMO insurance that the Department of Health regulates. I think what the bill is attempting to do is to streamline the regulation of all health insurance under one state agency so that consumers, insurers, and everyone else know where to go for questions that are answered. And more importantly, from our perspective, that coverage policies are interpreted the same way, regardless of whether it's a policy regulated by one entity or another. There have been instances in the past where a provision in law is covered in all policies, whether they're insurance or under an HMO license, But each department may have a different interpretation about what the language means and how that benefit is applied, which, again, is confusing for both the issuers as well as the consumer. So this is an attempt to streamline the regulation of all health insurance products under one agency. If I can take a minute to talk specifically about the two amendments that were offered. First with the A1, and I want to take a little bit of time because these are talking about both continuation coverage and prenatal benefits, which rightly cause people to pay attention. Actually, if I can address the A2 first, because that's really a technical change. The coverage of prenatal services has been a requirement in the state since the late 80s, and coverage of prenatal services has always been a requirement with no cost-sharing application, meaning there's no co-pays or deductibles for seeking prenatal benefits. We're not changing that. We're not attempting to change that. That's a good policy. The Department of Commerce has always interpreted that to mean, consistent with how the law is written today, that's a requirement for in-network coverage. Out-of-network coverage, just like every other preventive benefit, cost-sharing can apply. That's how state law and federal law have interpreted that since the law was passed. Last year, the Department of Commerce took a look at the definition in this statute and said, we're not sure if this technically does what we want it to do. And so we've been in conversations with them for that time about the interpretation of that. Conceptually, I think we're on the same page. What we're doing is replacing the old definition for in-network, out-of-network with the new definition for in-network, out-of-network, again, to clarify that we're being consistent with how products have been offered, sold, and administered in the state since this law was in place. That's the A2 amendment. The A1 amendment is a slightly different issue, and it differs with continuation coverage when there is a divorce. Under both state law and federal law, anytime there is a divorce, the divorced spouse has a right to continue their coverage under the group policy, and we're not changing that. In fact, we're trying to protect and strengthen the administration of that. And that's in place to make sure that if there is a divorce, again, the divorced spouse and the children can continue their health coverage dependent of what their former spouse, who is the employee, does. And we're trying to protect them. The issue we're attempting to address is the ability of employers in particular and insurers to administrate that right to coverage. And there is a difficulty in state law that does not exist in federal law, and that difficulty occurs in how state law requires the pricing of that benefit. And state law says that even though there's been a divorce and you no longer have a family, you have two separate individuals and two qualifying beneficiaries, you have to price for that as if they were still a family. And the intent of that was to make sure that people aren't paying more. The confusion that's created is now you are trying to track, cover, and provide benefits to two separate individuals under a family policy. And when that occurs, the divorced spouse oftentimes misses their opportunities for notifications and their rights because they're being tracked through the system as a dependent of their former spouse, not as their own qualifying beneficiary. There was an article in the Star Tribune in early February that highlighted an issue of a state employee who was dealing with just this, and I apologize, I didn't get this out to the committee ahead of time, but if I can have the page administer this. What it's outlining is a situation that this hopefully would address where a state employee was in a family situation, a divorce occurred. She still has that right to coverage, but because state law allows or required that their price as a family, she was considered a dependent on her former spouse's coverage. Again, not an application, but in terms of how it's tracked through the system. So when he left his job, came back, he reinstated benefits for himself and his children. He did not reinstate benefits for her. She missed the notification of her right to COBRA coverage because she was tracked under the spouse. And what we're trying to do is clarify that the pricing for individual qualifying beneficiaries is consistent with state and federal law so that employers and insurers can track the rights of that qualifying beneficiary separately so the divorced spouse isn't dependent on the former employee for notification, for coverage determinations, and other situations. This would mean in certain circumstances that if a divorce occurred, a family could move from one family policy to a family policy and a single policy. That situation could occur, but the market has moved away from simple family and single coverage determinations to single plus one, single plus one, two, three. That adds to the confusion of trying to administer this because every time there is a new marriage, a new child added to either side of that divorce, everyone's got to go through and try and recalculate again, how are we calculating this premium and are we doing it in a way that complies with the current law? So that's a confusing explanation, but it's a simple change in the law, but it does raise some questions. I want to try and explain it. I'm certainly happy to answer any questions for committee members.
Any questions? Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, I do have many questions with regard to it. So right now, when there's a divorce and it's classified in this way, I assume that the divorced spouse under the insurance card would have the other person's number as the identifying number, and then their number would be related to the identifier number. In your scenario, would they instead, when they go through a divorce, they would have an individual number completely separate from that would be kind of part of that unwinding process, Mr. Barsh?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, yes.
Okay. So then, Mr. Chair, I think one of the reasons why it's a little bit of a concern, because then I would assume when you give them an identifying number different from, then it would be repriced. And so what if in the divorce decree there was a stipulation that the employee had to provide coverage for the children and the spouse if the custody was, say, for example, with the mother. But now you've got a different identifier. How could that then be enforced? I would think that you could have a situation where then, because they're separate, that you wouldn't be billing. Could you just address?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, the determination of who's responsible for the payment of dependent coverage in divorce is an issue that I'm assuming is determined through the divorce proceedings. And the legal decision governs that both today and would govern that after this change would go into effect. So it wouldn't change any legal requirements either on the divorced spouse or the employee in terms of who's responsible for coverage determinations. And the same recourses would be available if one side or the other was not meeting their obligations under that.
Well, Mr. Chair, it may seem like the same recourses, but if it was tied to the employee's own personal insurance, I think compliance would be somewhat easier than if it was completely a firewall separate. So I think that you might find that you do have more concern with non-payment issues. And then my other question is, how will you reprice the new identifying member who now has a policy? How will that repricing happen? And what do you expect the change in cost to be for now that divorced spouse and perhaps children?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, the latter part of your question really kind of digs into the complexity of this issue. Under the current scenario, again, the only requirement is that we can't price the policy more than what would be a family premium. So we have to do that calculation again, whether it's a determination of single or family, whether it's a determination of two single policies, whether it's a determination of the employee is single and two dependents for kids plus another one. There's multiple variations that you have to determine. A likely scenario for traditional coverage, where there's a family policy that covers all dependents, and then there's a divorce. Under the new scenario, the family policy would cover one of the qualifying beneficiary and the child dependents, and a single policy would be issued for the other qualifying beneficiary. In that scenario, the difference would be you'd be paying an additional single premium. And depending on the employer and the makeup of the benefits, that would be the cost differential for it. That scenario can occur. There could also be scenarios where, again, the employee continues coverage plus one for a dependent, and the divorced spouse picks up single coverage. That the differential and cost of that may or may not be the same. There could be a situation where the employee has three dependents, single plus one plus two plus three. That may or may not be more than adding an additional single family premium. So there's certainly the ability for some premium variation. In most instances, the increase would be the addition of a single premium to the divorced spouse.
Okay, Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Burst, I guess the scenario I find myself most concerned with is the situation where the employee separates he or herself, and what's left in the unpriced group is the children and that spouse. And so I worry about the financial wherewithal in that situation.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, that is similar to your earlier question, whereas whether or not you price it as a family, they are separate qualifying beneficiaries. And that's under current law as well. And so the ability or inability of one side or the other of the divorce to comply with and pay for the premiums, that doesn't change. I think what you're raising is an issue of making sure that the divorced spouse as a qualifying beneficiary maintains their rights, both the right to coverage and that someone is paying the share of the premium that they said they were going to share. And that's legitimate. I think what we're trying to do is address and simplify the identity of two qualifying beneficiaries. Part of that is to help make those determinations so that everyone knows who's who and who's what and who's responsible for what.
Okay, other questions from the committee? Then Senator Hand, do you have – oh, I'm sorry, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if the departments have a comment on this bill.
Anybody from the Department?
Mr. Reich?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, we have talked with the department. I think they're – oh, okay.
Speak for himself.
Yeah. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Reich.
Mr. Chair, members, John Reich with the Department of Commerce. Thank you, Senator Rest. We have been in conversations with Mr. Bartsch about both of these items. While we're not fully on board yet, we're continuing to talk. We are taking a look at especially the A2 amendment that deals with some prenatal services. That has been something that we're reviewing internally right now with respect to the policies that have been filed and the coverage that is required per Mr. Bartsch's statements. With respect to the A1 amendment, I know that Mr. Bartsch and I and the governor's office have been in discussions about how this works. Some of the things that we've talked through with respect to this is a lot of the same issues that Senator Bonoff raised is how right now as a divorced spouse with it has to be priced as family coverage and whether or not that divorced spouse now that they continue the right to coverage and everything as Mr. Bartsch has said, which is a good thing, but whether or not that person really would be better off. In some instances I think they may be, and in some instances maybe not, and we're still trying to analyze that situation and see what the true impact of that divorced spouse, what the impact is on that divorced spouse as a result of this. So those are some quick thoughts on a matter that we've been discussing.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Rice, what about the underlying bill?
Oh, then yes.
There is an underlying bill here, you know, that affects the Department of Commerce.
Mr. Reich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm so easily distracted, I forgot about the underlying bill. The underlying bill, with respect to moving the HMO regulation over to the Department of Commerce, as Senator Han had talked about, we currently have an interagency agreement with the Department of Health to do many of the financial reviews that are currently under their jurisdiction. That works well for us right now. We don't necessarily have a position on this bill. The Department of Health, I think, is taking the lead on it, I think, along with the Department of Health and the authors, willing to sit down and talk to them further about it as we move forward. So I would defer to the Department of Health as it's their jurisdiction that's part of the bill.
Senator Rest.
So, Mr. Chairman, is there anybody here from the Department of Health and can comment on the underlying bill?
Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Jim Koppel. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Health, and we do not support the bill for a couple of reasons. This debate is a long debate in terms of the number of years that's gone back and forth. We are not opposed to working out an agreement where it makes sense to move responsibilities. And I think that is our approach to resolving this. So, for instance, financial viability, overall financial auditing, accounting does belong and is functionally done in the Department of Commerce. And while we contract for it, if that was decided that that function belonged there, I could understand that, and I don't think we'd have any problem moving that. I think the other piece, though, excuse me, is the Department of Health is about buying health or getting health for the dollars that we spend on health care. So we're looking at it from a quality measurement angle. We're looking at it from health outcomes. We're looking at HMOs, for instance, and network viability. Can a health plan or what's coming forward in the coming years, accountable care networks, provide the services that they need to in the networks that they have? Are people getting health when they buy health care coverage? And those areas, in terms of evaluation and quality, are things that very much have been a tradition in the Department of Health and are very much we're well suited to do. So I see this as more a division of function than simply applying oversight of all things to one department. So that's our rationale in discussing the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Koppel, does the governor share your concerns about this bill?
I haven't,
or the
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest.
Department, maybe not your individual concerns, but the department's concerns about the bill?
I don't know if the governor has a stated position on the bill other than he is concerned about, as we move forward with health reform and the changes that are occurring across the system, and as I mentioned, the evolution of accountable care organizations, I think the, how do we regulate them and how are we going to move forward? Those are open-ended questions, and I think the overlying concern is that we have a changing environment out there, and we want to move with it and oversee it in a responsible way, but we're not sure where all those pieces fit just yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Koppel, why is there a distinction, though, between the HMOs and the others? I mean, why are some suited to be housed in commerce and yet the HMOs are not? And then also, can't you provide that kind of oversight and accountability and not yet have the regulatory requirement? Because it seems to me that a regulatory requirement is best suited for commerce, and I would hope that you're looking at the accountability side, whether or not they're housed in Department of Health or not. I would assume you look at that within the insurance providers who are housed in commerce. So I don't understand, I guess, the need to keep that within your organization.
Mr. Kopp.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonoff. Yes, I think what you're saying is that if HMOs, if Commerce were the lead regulatory agency for HMOs as well as traditional insurance companies, that we would continue to do what we do. Mm-hmm. As I understand this bill, all of our HMO functions move to Commerce, including the oversight of the network viability, the quality, et cetera. All those employees move to Commerce in this legislation. So we may continue to do it as a habit but not with a jurisdiction nor legislative authority nor regulatory authority because all of that will have been moved. The concern I have is that this is a tradition in health of oversight of quality, of oversight of outcome, and network viability and assuring prevention in health is our what we hope for here. The only question is, will that remain with us as part of our mission? And consistent with our mission, or will that all be gone as well?
But Mr. Chair, Mr. Koppel, but why the difference? Why, you know, what is your relationship to the traditional insurance providers? Why are they in the Department of Commerce?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, and this is a long, as I mentioned, a long debate. When HMOs came on the scene, they were put in the Department of Health because of their unique nature. What HMOs provided in their initial stages, and I'm not an expert, so I don't want to be too far off grounds here, but their outcome was really they brought prevention. They did away with the deductible, the copay. They wanted the front-end preventive services. They were all about keeping their enrollee healthy. It wasn't buying the traditional insurance like wait till you're sick, go to a doctor. This was much more all prevention-focused, you know, or a significant change that we've now come to expect in many ways. But that was not the way insurance was in the 70s when HMOs came on the scene, in the 60s even. And so this changed. And because of the emphasis on health and the importance of keeping people healthy and prevention, that is why I believe that decision was made.
Sorry, further discussion on the bill? We're just trying to rearrange the schedule because we are going to run out of time here. Further discussion on the bill? And seeing none, is there anybody else in the audience that wanted to testify on this bill? Then Senator Hahn, any other remarks?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I appreciate your consideration of our bill and hope you'd find it worthy to move forward.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not convinced by Mr. Koppel about the underlying bill, but I am concerned about the A2 amendment and whether it's ready to have this bill move forward without further work. So I'm going to move to lay it over and hope that we can have some further discussion on it.
Senator Hand, did you want to speak to that?
It's non-debatable.
To lay it over. To take the amendment off. I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
No, just to lay the bill over.
To lay the bill over. Okay, Senator Rest moves to lay over Senate File 2139. All those in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
And the motion
division.
The division has been called for. Actually, I have to call
it. Sorry,
first.
I can tell motion. What you're going to do. Go ahead.
You don't know. The motion does not prevail.
Now
a division. All those in favor of the Rest motion to lay this bill on the table, raise your hand. We have 6 in the affirmative, and all those opposed to laying this bill on the table, raise your hand. That's 7. 7, and the motion does not prevail, so the motion of the bill is not laid on the table. Senator Hahn, did you want to?
Mr. Chairman, again, I appreciate the consideration of the committee and would hope that there would be a member who would be inclined to offer a motion to move the bill to the floor. I'm not aware that it needs to go to another committee.
Right. Senator Hahn, it does change some financial accounting within the departments, and so I've been informed that it would need to go to finance. So Senator Thompson moves that Senate File 2139 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no.
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 And the motion prevails. And Senate File 2139, as amended, is recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you,
Chair.
Senator Hahn. Now, members, it is 7 minutes to 12, and we have session at noon. I'm just looking at the calendar here because it was my bill that is bumped off the calendar today. And what I think we're going to do, because I know there are people in the audience that are concerned about when that is going to come up, and if you just give me a moment,
I'm just going to look at the calendar here.
She's talking about.
And the U.S.
But she just mentioned.
Well, he brought up both.
What we're going to do is we are going to have to we're going to recess for now, and then we're going to be coming back. I don't want to mix insurance and liquor bills tonight because of the audience that's interested, especially since it's an evening hearing. So I think it's best to stick to the content. And so I don't want to just roll that bill over to this evening. And what I think I'm going to do is we are going to fit in the bill we were going to hear today, which is Senate File 2255, my bill. We're going to move that to tomorrow, Wednesday, the 14th. We're going to fit that in tomorrow's agenda. So tonight will be just strictly the series of liquor bills. So with that, then, committee members, the Committee on Commerce will be in recess until 5:30 this evening. Thank you.